Welcome to episode 31 of Frank Reactions, the show where we help you improve customer experiences online and off so you can profit from the digital era. My name is Tema Frank and I'm your host. I've got to be the only person in the world to have had two serious gardening accidents. It's kind of embarrassing, but a few years back, I ripped my Achilles tendon in a gardening accident, and this time I broke the foot on the other side. I think I'm going to have to take up something safer, like skydiving. Because I've been so busy hobbling to and from doctor's appointments and x-ray labs over the last week or so, I've decided that this week I'm going to rebroadcast an episode that some of you may have already heard on the Frank Online Marketing Show. But it really belonged on this podcast anyway, because it was all about three major elements that go into creating great customer experiences. The guest is Bernard Rosauer, who wrote a really interesting paper called The Three Bell Curves. And when I came across the paper, I was really struck by how similar his thinking was to what I call the three P's that lead to profits. So when I talk about the promise you make to customers, he refers to it as the why. Why are we doing things around here? When I talk about process, it's what he calls the work. What gets done around here? And when I talk about people, he refers to the employees, although personally I would say it extends to other people as well, including customers, suppliers, and other stakeholders. In this interview, he discusses how each of those three categories can be further subdivided into three sections of a bell curve, two extremes, and of course the big bulk in the middle. To be successful, you need to constantly be trying to move those bell curves further to the right. Enjoy the interview, and I will chat with you briefly at the end of it.
My name is Bernie Rosauer, and I'm an advisor to companies with regard to culture improvement, change management, etc. My background is kind of interesting. It's not in the consultancy background. I don't have an academic background, so to speak. Mm-hmm. My background is in commercial insurance, and by being in commercial insurance, I had a chance for 20-some-odd years to see lots of businesses, and lots of businesses do well, and lots of businesses do not so well, and quite often see businesses fail when it comes to having customers have an appreciation for what they do, coming back for more, and referring other customers to that company.
Okay.
And so as I sat and I listened and observed over the years, I started to notice trends, and the trends I used to come up with a methodology and a definition for culture that I thought worked better than anything I had read in terms of being usable. I decided to take my information and write a white paper called Three Bell Curves, and it's hosted at threebellcurves.com. It's free for anybody to download it.
Now, it's interesting because, as you know, I read that book or your article and found it very similar to what I've been calling the three P's, the promise, people, and process. But one thing before we get into that and that similarity, I was struck by your making the distinction between things that are simple and things that are easy. Can you talk a little bit about that difference? What is the difference?
Sure. At the beginning of the paper, I make a point about the need to keep things simple. Simple makes sense to everybody, from the top line to the bottom line worker. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important that everybody has the capability of having a full picture of what needs to be done.
Okay.
And the analogy here is, about 7 years ago, I decided to take upon my own the task of laying tile in my kitchen.
Yes.
A large kitchen and expensive tile, and
I had a friend help me who said, Bernie, it's really easy. You know, there's no problem. It's easy.
Yeah.
And as I got into it, I recognized that, yeah, it is easy. It's easy to plan it, and it's easy to spread the mud and to, you know, lay the tile. But at the end of the 4 days, I was dead tired.
Yes.
My knees were raw, you know. My back hurt. And
yeah.
So it was interesting, and I use that in this paper as kind of the analogy is that things can be easily understood.
Yep.
But very difficult to execute. So mm-hmm. My point with regard to culture is that the things that I point out as being easy should not be necessarily seen as simple
yep.
to execute.
Well, and I think...
So that's it.
I think that is probably part of the problem with all those business books too, right? Because they make it sound easy. I mean, theoretically, I think a lot of leaders and companies know what they ought to be doing, and yet the execution is incredibly difficult.
Right. Right. I would say that a lot of leaders aren't, that I've run into, are not exactly sure what they ought to be doing.
Okay, so let's talk about these three bell curves. Let's start with what are they and why are they important?
Okay. Well, you know, as I looked for the definition of what corporate culture is, I was trying to rely on somebody else. And I should say that all of this work really resulted from the work of others,
mm-hmm.
people who researched these issues, people who understand the issues. I put them together as they made sense. The three bell curves are derived from the definition of culture that Kennedy and Deal came up with. That's simply the way things work around here. and if you Google corporate culture, you'll receive millions of hits within less than a second. So.
Yeah.
There's some real confusion out there about what it is culture really is. So I took that definition because it was clear enough to me and simple enough to me. And I thought, well, you know, what is it that companies do around here?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to keep it all encompassing, really, what companies do is pretty basic. It starts out with employees. Every company has an employee.
Mm-hmm.
A customer, you better have at least one, or you're not a company.
Yep.
And then all the stuff that happens between the two, in other words, the work.
Right.
And so each of those entities, the employee, the work, and the customer, all have bell curves. In other words, they can all be placed on a chart and fall into categories where either they are producing value, producing waste, or are somewhere in the middle.
Right.
And so I want employees, beginning at the top but going all the way to the bottom, to begin to imagine employees, the work itself, and the customer on a bell curve, and everybody wants more of what there is to be on the right side of the bell curve.
Yeah,
so
sure.
If it's normal now and you have a perfectly even bell curve,
mm-hmm.
the goal is to push it to the right, and that should be kind of the marching order for the entire organization.
Right, fair enough. And so what you're saying then is... these are essentially three dimensions that you need to be constantly struggling to improve and create more value rather than and eliminate things that are wasteful. Is that correct?
That is correct. And I want to say that those are the three areas that are actually manageable. The way they come together and emerge is pretty difficult to is impossible to manage. I mean, and that's what culture is. Culture is the way those three things emerge. You know, the world experiences. It's kind of your brand.
Yeah.
What people think of you. And you can't control that, but you can guide that. and that's by managing the employee, the work, and the customer.
Okay. So let's talk about each of those individually a bit. One, and part of what excited me in reading your book is, or in reading your article, is you were on the same lines that I am in terms of thinking that there are certain elements that companies often leave out. So one of the big things that I see is the people side, that companies will say, yes, we're going to treat our customers great, but if you're not treating your employees in a way that inspires them and gets them engaged, you're not going to be able to do that. So can you talk a little bit, you talk in your article about three keys to employee engagement. Could you elaborate on what those are and how to bring those about?
Sure. And this work, as I indicated, was derived from experts that have been in the field much longer than I have.
Sure.
Sirota Service Surveys has been in business since the 70s,
mm-hmm.
have millions upon millions of points of data.
Yep.
And what their data points to is, again, three items. One of them being a sense of achievement, the mm-hmm. second one being a sense of camaraderie, and third, equity. So those are the three key goals of any organization in order to help maximize engagement of employees.
Okay. Now, one of the
I should say that equity beats out the other two many times. I mean,
really?
If you're winning in all three categories and you took equity out, the result would drop by over 300%. Equity is extremely important.
And so you're saying basically that you need a sense of equity even to sustain a feeling of camaraderie and that sense of achievement?
Not necessarily, because
okay.
You can be treated poorly, but then what typically happens in organizations is camaraderie can actually build, but it's a negative camaraderie.
Mm-hmm.
It's camaraderie about, you know, this place
right.
it stinks, doesn't it? Yeah, it really
sure.
stinks. You know, let's go drink some beer after work and talk some more about how it stinks.
Exactly. Fair enough.
You know, and that's just negative camaraderie.
Now, what I found interesting is in your discussion of Sirota's work, which I'll put some links to in the show notes for this, you found that even companies that score well on all three of those categories only showed an engagement level of 45%. And I found that very startling. And
yeah.
I'm wondering, I mean, my speculation was I wondered if part of that was perhaps that they may have had camaraderie, equity, and a sense of achievement, but they didn't really sense the value or purpose of their work overall. Do you think that's maybe why, or do you think there are other factors why that figure is still so low?
What I think is that the achievement, sense of achievement, has built in the sense of purpose.
Okay.
In other words, they don't want to just achieve a grade or a score they want to achieve something important.
All right.
You know, and that's where I think purpose sort of fits in.
Okay.
It takes into account that surveys were performed on companies and people across the board. In other words, there are a good portion of employees who don't bring to the table things that are needed in order to succeed. In other words, employers don't have full control over the way all employees will answer those surveys.
Okay.
And so the employers need to start looking at those things at the time of hire. You know, is this
mm-hmm.
person capable of being, of even caring about equity? Is this person even care? Do they even care about camaraderie?
Mm-hmm.
Will they sit in the corner? Are they the loner type? Do they care about the sense of achievement, or are they just there for the paycheck?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think the ones that are just there for the paycheck are what bring that overall score down.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what's great is that it gives companies, you know, an objective view as to what they should be looking for when hiring. hiring people, because these surveys were taken upon existing employees.
Yeah.
And overall, you know, we hear about engagement being at like 30% and 20% in our country.
Yeah.
That's very similar to the 45% score.
Mm-hmm.
The goal is to attract people that are capable, you know, mentally at least, of being encouraged, you know, not feeling like, you know, that can be led.
Sure.
And that care about what they do.
Sure.
There are people out there that don't care about what they do as long as they get a paycheck.
Sure.
And, you know, those are the ones that really don't add a whole lot of value to the organization.
Those things are notoriously difficult to try and accurately gauge in an interview process. So I'm thinking,
yeah,
part of the I almost wonder then if that would suggest Jack Welch's approach of just every year getting rid of the bottom 10%. Does that
mean? Yeah. You know what? It might have been, but that 10% could be 10%. It could be 5%, or it could
sure
be 30%.
Yep.
And the better you do up front, the smaller that amount has to be.
Yeah.
The amount should be there. Any organization that feels as though they don't have that, at least, you know, small percentile of non-performers, probably isn't measuring things properly.
Or not being honest with themselves.
Right.
So that's sort of the people side. And I fully agree that sense of engagement is crucial. Let's talk now about the three. It was so funny when I read this with all these threes. We lived in France a few years ago, and my daughter was going to high school there. And one of the things that they teach them in the academic system there is that every essay has to have three major points, and each point has to have three subpoints. And it's always
that's
this rule.
Funny.
Yeah, so I thought, you got that bang on. I wondered if you'd studied in France.
Well, that's funny.
Yeah, so let's talk now about the three categories of work.
It's rather simple. The work that companies do or that people are involved in are either non-value added to the end customer and can be considered waste,
mm-hmm,
are considered value to the end customer and are considered, again, valuable. But a good way to ask yourself in kind of human terms, you know, is what I'm doing right now something the end customer would pay for?
Mm-hmm.
And if not, it's either waste or it's the third category, and it's the third category is in the middle. And the middle is the work that's required to do, to be done either by law, to meet compliance,
mm-hmm,
et cetera.
Okay.
No consumer wants to pay for you to have to fill out 15 forms to make,
mm-hmm,
the government happy.
Yeah.
But if it has to be done, it has to be done. We can't call it waste because it has to be done in order to continue to do business.
Right.
So there's a good amount of that work. You know, there's a good amount of that work. But I was listening to a speaker yesterday talk about waste in organizations, and top-class organizations are able to remove, in a service industry, are able to remove up to 30%,
wow,
waste within the first few years.
Impressive.
Of actually working on it, and the rest, there's still a lot that's considered waste.
Yeah.
So, you know, the big hits are in the beginning when you travel down that path of eliminating waste.
Yeah.
There is a way. It's called lean.
Yeah.
And so there's always room for improvement and always room for waste reduction. And ultimately, when the waste is removed, people start using that mindset to think about innovation. And that's,
mm-hmm,
kind of the really cool thing. It's because as an organization grows through either more sales, more advertising, or through an innovative product, what you don't want to grow with it is the waste.
Yeah.
So you, you know, otherwise left alone, the waste will grow at the same exponential degree that the organization grows, and you really don't want that.
It may even grow faster. I was walking through a hospital yesterday and looking at all these paramedics sitting and waiting with patients in the emergency room. Talk about waste.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
yeah.
There are certain systems, and I mean, you've probably seen this working with larger companies. It seems almost the larger the organization, the more difficult it is to root out some of those wasteful issues. Do you, from your experience, have any tips or suggestions about how companies can restructure to get rid of the waste? I mean, we've done business process reengineering, and it seemed that all that led to was a bunch of layoffs that weren't very well considered.
An organization called lean.org.
Okay.
And you can visit it, the Lean Information Institute or something like that. But the website offers an abundance of free information.
Okay.
And at first, people will believe that lean only belongs in the manufacturing world, when in fact it absolutely does not. Lean thinking and a lean mindset applies in the kind of knowledge worker area as much as it does in any manufacturing organization. So lean.org, James Womack is the founder of that organization. There are several books you can purchase through that.
Mm-hmm.
Or implement the whole lean mindset into the organization. You can learn it on your own. Lean is not brain surgery.
Yeah.
Lean is just understanding, and it's continuous learning.
Right. Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, and one of the nice things, too, is that if you manage to develop that sense of employee engagement, then they will start bringing to you ways things can be done better.
Absolutely. These three bell curves overlap big time.
Absolutely.
So you make a change in one, and it's going to affect the others.
Now, one of the things that startled me a little bit about what you wrote, because it seems to me part of the problem in developing more efficient processes is often that there are organizational silos. And you made the comment in your paper that silos themselves are not a problem. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Yeah, I can. I think speaking from an American organization standpoint, silos have almost always been in existence with companies once they reach a certain size.
Yep.
There's a good reason for that. It's because certain areas of business need to focus on what they do and be very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that organizations have to understand is that while they have those silos, customers pass through them horizontally.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's enough for the walls of the silos to be soft or penetrable.
Mm-hmm.
The silos actually have to, I like to say, they have to dance.
Mm-hmm.
They have to respect each other, not look at themselves as the center of the universe, and understand that, you know, the better they can dance with the other silos, the better the customer is going to feel.
So why is it so hard to get them to dance together? And what are some strategies that are helpful in breaking down the mentality that we're the only ones who matter?
It's hard to do it because it pertains to power.
Yeah.
Mostly, you know, the hierarchy within a silo, it's easier for them to control a silo with thick walls.
Yeah.
I would argue that an executive that is controlling like that is actually detrimental to the organization.
Yeah.
And the way to break through is to educate that executive, and B, have an overwhelming focus on customer, end customer, not internal customers, but end customers.
Yep.
and for the CEO, I mean, I really do think it's the CEO's role to set the vision for everything that is done to benefit the ultimate customer of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people talk about internal customers, and, you know, I kind of cringe when I hear that because it puts them on par with the ultimate customer. I see every organization as a system that really needs to work together to get the end customer what it needs in a timely fashion.
Yes.
And thick walls and big hierarchies are an impediment to making that happen. You know, it slows down things. It builds up animosity, or at least a lack of information about other silos, and that just stagnates. It slows the business down. And so I really think an overwhelming focus
mm-hmm.
on what it is ultimately the organization is trying to do with the customer, along with performance management, will help an organization get there. And that's the third bell curve, the customer piece. So.
Right. So talk a little bit more about the customer piece then.
Okay. So the customer piece is also a bell curve, right? There are customers that are not valuable. They don't like who you are. They will talk poorly about you and spread the news about what a crummy organization you are and what their experience was like.
Right.
Majority of customers fall in the middle,
yep.
You know, and they're sort of, hey, if a new price comes along, you know, I'll take a good look at it, and if it's that much better, I'll leave you. I don't care that much about you.
Right.
And on the right side are the actual promoters. Those are the customers who really appreciate what you do, feel a tie to your organization emotionally, sometimes even, and won't stray, and in fact will promote you. And
right.
It's the best form of marketing there is. Any marketer will tell you that the promotion you get from your current customers is the cheapest, best form
yep.
of growing your business.
Absolutely.
And if anybody's read a book by Fred Reichheld,
mm-hmm.
Fred Reichheld is a fellow at Bain & Company who's done a bunch of research and actually put the customers into those three categories, or I should say the customers put themselves into those three categories, and one are the detractors, one are those that are indifferent, and the other section are the promoters. Promoters are at the right hand of the bell curve.
Yeah.
We want to find out where we stand, take measurements, and get as many customers over to the right hand of the bell curve if possible. Even if it means firing some of the customers on the left side who are either chronic complainers or whose needs really don't fall within something your firm is there to provide.
Sure.
And the way that a customer's place on that bell curve is determined is by asking one simple question, and that is, what is the likelihood that you will refer this organization to a family, friend, or coworker?
Yeah.
Depending on the way they answer that question, we'll put them in a category on that bell curve.
Yes.
So, you know, anybody that, and it's a scale of 0 to 10, anybody that scores a 9 or a 10 is a promoter.
Yeah.
Anybody that scores a 6 to an 8 is kind of indifferent. And anybody from 0 to 6 is considered a detractor.
Right. And so you end up with the net promoter score.
It's called the net promoter score, is correct.
So if you were coming into an organization that was in trouble, unhappy customers, unhappy staff, poor processes, where would you start at trying to fix things? What do you think is the most valuable place to start a major change effort?
I think to meet with the executive at the very top at first and get her or his thoughts about where they stand.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of work my way down the organization, and then to ultimately interview those employees who actually either make the product or are face-to-face with customers.
Yep.
And see how well all that matches up. And way more often than not, what the CEO thinks is happening is not what the front line thinks is happening.
Yeah.
And that's where the conversation starts.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, the way I've done things is to, as soon as possible, develop a score for the customers and find out that organization's net promoter score.
Okay.
Because ultimately, that's what you want to improve. And you're going to improve it through employee engagement and making the work inexpensive, and because that filters down to the customer as well, and delivered in a quality way and on time.
Yeah.
It's hard to say what's first. I think you can do the employee engagement piece at the same time that you can do the work piece.
Mm-hmm.
But ideally, if you had all the time in the world, which companies don't, I would start with the customer, then the employee, and then introduce lean thinking to the organization. And most people love it. People who have been on, with the organization for a long time, so they've got a lot of tenure. They're used to doing things the old way. They need to see and understand why change is necessary. You know, I think one of the most dangerous things is an organization that doesn't know they have a culture problem.
Yes.
And so by reading this, there have been a few that said, boy, I guess I really didn't know what was going on in the shop. How do I know that we're driving waste out of the organization and that it can benefit the customer in the end? And so it's kind of, it's opened eyes.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because sometimes they really don't want to have their eyes opened. I wrote a book, geez, going on 20 years ago now, about Canada's best employers for women. And some of the companies that didn't make it in wanted to talk to me about why not. And I had done interviews with their staff at all levels. And when I told them what their staff were saying, they didn't believe me. It was funny because, I mean, I had recordings that I, could alter the voices and let them hear. But it is funny because sometimes they just have their heads buried in the sand and they just don't want to know.
Yeah. Convincing those heads of those silos are, that's a task. As you probably know, that you come in and you present in many ways a threat because you're looking at something that they helped create and develop.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yep.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciated this conversation. As Bernard said, this is easy to understand, but it's far from simple to implement. But I'm sure I don't need to tell you that if you work in this field, or even if you're not officially a customer experience practitioner, but a CEO or somebody else who's struggling to try and improve the customer experience and customer service at your organization. In addition to this episode, if you haven't already subscribed to the Frank Reactions podcast, you might want to do that because each of these episodes will give you more tips and advice and strategies for ways that you can improve that experience for your customers and ways that you can make your employees happier so they deliver better customer experiences and how you can convince your colleagues that this is something worth doing. I've got some really cool episodes coming up. One I'm really excited about that I'm going to be recording very soon is with Dave Carroll, who did the United Breaks Guitars video. And if you haven't seen that, go look it up on YouTube. It's been viewed by over 15 million people, and it totally changed Dave's career, as you will hear in an upcoming episode. If you've got other suggestions for people that you'd like me to interview, please just send them along. You can always reach me by email, Tema, T-E-M as in marketing, A, at frankreactions.com. You can reach me on Twitter at Tema Frank. You can leave a telephone message or talk to me directly if I happen to be around. That's toll-free 1-866-544-9262. And if you like this podcast, please tell your friends about it and review it on iTunes and Stitcher, because that'll help other people discover it. And if more people discover it, more people will provide great customer experiences, which goes to help everybody. That's all for today. Have a great week, and I'll chat with you again next week. Bye.